Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics. Like, I experience an event, and I'm also kind of at the point where I've read letters from a Stoic enough, you know, where I'll have like some event happen to me on my day-to-day life. I'm like, oh, this letter relates to that. Let me read it again as a reminder. I don't know if you've gotten to that point, but I kind of have.
I haven't reread Meditations in a long time. I haven't reread, like, actually gone back and looked for it. Like, I also don't have my copy with me. It's still back in LA, but even when I had it, I wasn't really going back and rereading it because I kind of knew everything that was in. I would just go back if I needed to find a specific quote that I really needed to get word for word, but yeah. Kind of the same way. Everything, it's kind of just ingrained now. It's kind of just habit, lifestyle at this point. It's not really anything new, but yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm kind of interested though in picking up some Viktor Frankl. I think I will do that very soon in the future. I need to get some books. I have a couple books that I have to read first, but then Frankl is definitely on my list after we've been talking about him.
Yeah, no, it's I went and got lunch with that guy I told you about, who kind of introduced me to Viktor Frankl before I even knew what Stoicism was. Like, and I was just reflecting on this. Like, I read Viktor Frankl before I even knew what Stoicism was, and I didn't even connect the dots between, man's search for meaning and Stoic texts until, like, I was literally just on Google, and then he was like on a list of Stoic philosophers, and I was like, oh, that's interesting, because he's not even a philosopher; he's a psychotherapist, and he really started CBT. So he's a very influential guy, and it's one of those books. I know we had, it was like Giovanni or somebody who we were talking about that book with, and it's one of those things where it's like a really, really rough start, but you kind of have to get to the dark experiences to get to the really, I think, groundbreaking teachings that he introduces. It's just, and it's also interesting, right? I was also thinking about this, right? That was the kind of new wave of psychotherapy and philosophy. You had like Ralph Waldo Emerson, and you had a lot of those people. And we have Ryan Holiday now. And, we have kind of transitioned to where, like, philosophers, in a sense, have been digitized. They've become like influencers, right? Because instead of these people with like the long locks of hair and they look like George Washington and all of that, and they're sitting in their study writing, we have like Ryan Holiday, who wears Metallica t-shirts and AC/DC t-shirts. And that's like our Stoic philosopher of the new age. So it's
his story every single day on Instagram. I wonder, I feel like Stoics back in the day, if social media was a thing, would have used their accounts for good to get the messages out.
I don't even want to think about that. I wish we lived in a society where social media didn't exist. So I think it's more fun to think about what if we lived in a society where social media no longer existed, rather than what if society 2,000 years ago had social media.
If it no longer existed, or if it had never existed?
Either. If it no longer existed and we still had the previous history of social media, our generation would be screwed. Like, it would be so funny.
Our whole world would be doomed, bro.
How do I make plans? How do I make social plans? I can't send
a phone. I used to go knock on doors. That's what I used to do. I used to go knock on my friends' doors. I didn't even know if they were home. That's what I used to do.
Yeah, me too. I had like two friends in my neighborhood, and I would just go knock on their door, and then I don't know. It was like more innocent, because then you just like run around, and your parents wouldn't know where you were. And you're just like doing stuff until dinner time.
Until the sun goes down, and then you have to go eat. Dude, I would get kicked out of my house for like 8 hours at a time. They were like, "Don't come back until 3 o'clock or until the sun's down or something." And we would just be outside all day. Best day, best years of my life. Best moments of my life that if I could go back to, that would be it.
Yeah. It's childlike innocence. I think the concept we relate it to is like our inner state being joy. And I think phones and technology and social media they're so artificial to like the human experience, because they're tools that we built that aren't kind of inherent in humanity. And once you're introduced to those things, you kind of lose that sense. You lose just like natural state because you are surrounded by things that are unnatural, unnatural for the human brain. Even
it's just disruptive. It's all very, like you said, unnatural. And so because of that, it's just going to disrupt what we were meant to do, how we were meant to think. Like, we weren't meant to be flooded with all this. Now, I wouldn't even say information, because a lot of it's not information. It's just content. We weren't meant to be flooded with a bunch of stimulants at once. It's super cool to have the ability to, you know, have all this information when we need it and be able to do that. But there's so many cons that come with it as well that we also just weren't meant to experience or feel. And it's like changing the structure of our brains. And now we're just different. We think different. We react different.
Yeah. And it's all about choice. Like, we live always as humanity have lived in a society of choice. It's just choices are more omnipresent now because you always have your phone next to you. And so you always have the choice of like, am I going to consume this podcast episode with the Hawk Tua girl, or am I going to consume this podcast that talks about like history or something where I can learn from it? It's constant choice. And it's usually the choice boils down to entertainment or purpose, which is essentially what we founded this podcast on, is determining that living purposefully and seeking meaning is much more fulfilling and better for society than seeking entertainment and pleasure. Those two don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? You can live a purposeful life and still enjoy the pleasures that you want to partake in, but choosing one more so over the other is paramount, I think, to our generation, to society as a whole, especially because you look at like news events and then the choice is entertainment or purpose, and that boils down to truth or like conspiracy theories to get clicks and views, right? We had an event happen yesterday that's an example of that we're not going to talk about because we want to remain an apolitical podcast, but that's just another example of that. So it's very interesting to draw those parallels, right? Where essentially it does boil down to that pleasure versus purpose. And I think there's a lot of people higher up, not to sound, too conspiracy theorists, but there's a lot of people higher up who are successful, right? Who are like CEOs, who have made that choice, who are then peddling content and information and sources of things that are distractions, so that they're like, oh, I can reap all the benefits that I've found in life, and I'll just keep these people down here a tier below by distracting them with meaningless things. Because why not, right? I think there's a lot of us who could say, even if we're good people, right, if we're sitting there and we're a CEO of a company or very wealthy, and we're faced with the choice of like, do we share our knowledge and potentially risk losing part of our market share or part of our profit or anything? Or do we sit there and say, well, we can maximize our profits if we keep everybody else down? I mean, a lot of us are going to do the second option. I don't think either of us would choose that option, but it's kind of natural for humans. If you can get away with it and it, you know, increases your power, increases your net worth, you're probably going to do that. But creating a society that prioritizes that purpose creates a society that flourishes together, in my opinion, right? If everybody's chasing purpose instead of pleasure, then nobody's going to be like, oh, I need to keep these secrets to myself, because A, they're not really secrets anymore. And B, when you're living purposefully, you want to see others succeed as well. I think there's a strong correlation between finding the why in your life, finding the purpose, and then saying, how can I help others do the same thing? There's a strong correlation with that. And it's because of that internal sense that we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, inherently people are greedy. Like, we're going to want more. Everybody wants more. We kind of naturally equate more to better. And so, like you said, I was thinking about that the other day, because now a big thing that's kind of emerging is content creators. And you see the content creators who are like, oh, let me like buy my course and I'll show you how to get rich. But it's like, if you really think about it, nobody's going to willingly nobody in the mindset of, you know, choosing pleasure over purpose is going to willingly give out all the secret sauce to make you more successful in a market than that they're in already. No one's going to do that. And so I think that's kind of a big scam now, is people aren't actually making money necessarily that way. They're making money getting the views, getting the publicity. That's actually what's getting them money. But because of that, they're kind of able to be like, buy my course, give me more money, and then you'll learn this. Then you don't actually end up learning anything. But those views kind of get censored, that are the reviews that are like one star, like you could learn this on YouTube, or it's not as valuable. Those get censored to keep. And it's all kind of just, you have to wonder like, what's even real? Like, who's being honest? And it sucks, because you never really know who's doing things for your best interest or for theirs. And I was in the car with my mom the other day, And she was saying, it kind of sucks how the media has made your generation so like cynical towards everything, like towards the systems and towards politics and everything. I was like, yeah, absolutely. More than ever, we're like, oh, politics is dumb, I'm just not going to vote. Or we're like, oh, this system is broken, right? We're very cynical. But I also think that's a good thing, because it's almost better to be overly cynical about something than to never question it or think about it at all. Because I think you can, it's harder to kind of have that realization rather than kind of backtracking and being more realistic than overly cynical about like a system or a situation.
Well, and like a couple points there is like, it's hard not to be cynical when the institutions of politics, the like social institutions, when the institutions of like the education system are failing, right? Like they're failing our generation. If you think about like mental health care, those institutions of like therapy and, you know, pharmaceuticals and how we've treated a lot of mental illnesses have been around for a while. And yet our generation is like the most depressed, most anxious ever. So if those institutions are failing, then one must logically conclude, right, that something is wrong with them. It's either something is wrong with these institutions or something is wrong with society. And I think something is wrong with these institutions is a lot less scary conclusion to make than something is wrong with society. And I think it's the correct conclusion as well. But the problem with our generation being overly cynical is that we never back it up with like motivation. It's that mindset, like you said, it's like, oh, politics are dumb, I'm not going to participate, rather than saying politics are dumb, how can we fix this, right? It's cynicism without motivation, which a lot of cynicism is that, is just saying, let's reject this institution. This is some stupid abstract thing that I don't have to participate in, not let's fix it. That's kind of what cynicism is about. But when we pair kind of that questioning mindset with the motivation to say, let's answer these questions and let's fix it, that's when we start to kind of produce results. And to speak on like the YouTuber stuff, the way that we do these things is taking it off the internet, going like, if we want to take it like politics or like the education system, going and campaigning for what you believe in, going and spreading your message. The internet is a good tool for that, but you can't be genuine through the internet. Like if you want to know who's genuine and who's not, meet them off the internet, meet them off camera, meet them when they're actually their true selves, and then evaluate what they're saying and how they act. That's a good way to do it. We're talking about like how to get wealthy. Don't buy courses on the internet, because those people, that all comes with strings attached. Instead of doing that, just find and network with somebody in your life who is a little bit better off than you are and learn from them if they're willing to share with you. Some people aren't going to be willing to share with you. It's kind of a natural thing in life. But you have to be able to use the tools to network so that you can take everything off of the screen, off of digital products, off of technology, and just sit down face to face with the person and assess, like, how did they get there? What habits do they have? Things like that. Because, like, there are courses out there that can teach you those things, but would you rather just read it off a computer screen or watch a video on it? Or would you rather have the real life example staring you in the face? Because the real life example staring you in the face not only is more genuine, but it's more of a presser to say, like, get your ass going. Like, let's go. Because you sit on the internet, you sit on the screen, you can just go like, oh, I'm going to close the screen. And then you go, you know, get on the hub or something, and you just do unproductive things, right? Like you close your screen, you're like, wow, that was really inspirational. Doom scroll, like degeneracy, things like that. And so you have like this one good piece of information in the back of your head, but it's influencing you while you do terrible things. If you're having this conversation with this person who's right in front of you, you're like, wow, I can see the results right here in front of me. I can touch the results. Like, I should do this. And it's a more pressing motivation. Now, the ultimate strategy is to just be motivated yourself instead of seeking out external motivation. Wow, stoic concept there. It's just building up that internal motivation. And I don't think internal motivation isn't going to result in a concrete form from the internet, from the media. It's the only way that you get concrete forms of motivation is if it's generated from inside of you. Same thing with like happiness, right? If you think you're happy, but you're looking for examples of how to be happy, you're looking for things that make you happy, you're looking for experiences that generate the feeling of happiness, that's never concrete, because it's always fleeting, because those circumstances, those people, those examples can always change. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I don't know how to feel. If you just tell yourself, I should feel happy, that's how humans generally feel, I'm not going to place this condition upon my happiness, boom, everything changes. Same thing with your success, right? and motivation. You can insert any word into there, and if it's generated within yourself, it's a concrete example of that, because the only person who controls whether it leaves is you. If you place external conditions on happiness, on success, on motivation, on wealth, then it's going to disappear sooner rather than later, because it's going to be generated and it's going to not. That's just the general state of life. So counteracting that is just generating everything within yourself. That's the biggest thing I think we can transmit to our audience, is like, our podcast, generally, I think it's great. I think we say great things, and it's going to be exciting for our audience to see us be successful. But take yourself off of the podcast, take yourself off the internet, and just go generate the motivation yourself. Seek out some solitude, find it in yourself, and go and execute on it. Simple. It's a 3-step plan. No courses needed, no BS, no paying money, just 3-step plan, right? Solitude, find yourself, execute. Boom, done.
The thing that's tough too is when you see all these courses and stuff, they're like, you'll make your first 10K in a month and it'll be easy. But it's not actually easy. Even side hustles, it's not a quick little side hustle. Like, it might be quick, but it takes work. It takes a lot of hard work. And that's something that we're kind of just opposed to. Now, we want something easy that we can do 3 clicks and we don't have to think about, and then instantly, boom, we have money. But the reality is, the reason, you know, most people aren't doing all these side hustles, that you don't see a lot of people doing side hustles and making money quickly, is because it's not easy. It takes work. You have to fail. I mean, that's the biggest thing. There's a mentor that I have in my life at the moment who's kind of helping me work my way through the world of business. And I'm like, dude, it's tough. It is hard. You have to fail so many times before you can succeed. So many times. Like, that's why people stop. They'll start a month or two and they'll stop because they just keep failing. And they're like, oh, this isn't working. Month 3, month 4, maybe even a year of failure, and then you succeed. It can take however long. It really takes, you know, there's no guaranteed time for you to succeed. It's really just going to matter how much work you're putting in, which sucks, but it's a lot more rewarding than just sitting on your computer and scamming people and getting money. I mean, when you go to bed at night, if you're a scammer and you're like, oh, buy my course, and it's just garbage, how can you go to bed at night knowing that you've scammed people for their money just so you can buy like a car? I mean, it's not morally correct at all. And that's the thing about Stoics, is they wouldn't give up their morals just for gain. It's tempting. And we make excuses like this all the time. We're like, oh, just one time, you know, one more time, it won't be that bad. But you become what you do consistently. Those are the things that define you. Your habits and the things you do consistently are the things that define you. So if you're consistently making excuses, if you're consistently taking shortcuts, then you're a slacker. You become lazy. You become undisciplined. And that's what you were saying. The way to succeed is to have motivation that's kind of internal. And at that point, it's not motivation. It's just discipline, because you know what your reason is, what your purpose is, what your goal is, whatever you want to call it. But you have to figure that out first. And it has to be personal. It can't just be a goal that you want to kind of add to yourself. It has to become who you are. Like, you have to morph yourself into the person who would get the results that you want. It's not just a characteristic that you can add. It's not a course that you can buy. It's not something that you can pay for. It's internal. And that's hard. And people don't like things when they get difficult. People hate that now. And that's why everyone would rather just feel kind of comfortable and go to a 9-to-5 and just take their money and live paycheck to paycheck, because it's comfortable. It's not necessarily convenient, but it's more convenient than the struggle of those first 3, 4, 5 months to a year before you actually succeed. And so that's kind of where we're at, is we have a generation that's like, yeah, I mean, it's never been easier to get rich, but I'm not rich because I'd rather just, you know, go to work and not have to do anything hard, and I still get by. But just getting by, just settling for okay, it's not going to get you anywhere. That's not getting our generation anywhere. Settling for mediocrity, settling for doom scrolling 8 hours a day. You know, first thing you do, you wake up, you get on your phone, consume. Last thing you do before you go to bed, you're consuming until you fall asleep. Is that really who we are? Is that really who we want to be? It's kind of sad. I mean, we've developed these lives that are completely separate from reality. Our lives now exist online. And as soon as we close the laptop, we don't even know what to do. We just go and eat food and jerk off and then go back on the computer. And then we just live this life that's a complete lie. But because it requires zero thinking and it's so easy to just sit down in your bed or your chair and just scroll or be, you know, be entertained or whatnot. That's why we do it. And so we'll never escape this endless cycle unless something really bad or really intense happens to you in your life that forces you to. That's the big thing, is something will have to happen to you in order for you to kind of have an awakening moment and realize, okay, I actually have to get up and do stuff. I can't just sit on my phone 5 hours a day as soon as I wake up, go to work for 5-6 hours, make minimum wage, come home, spend it all on clothes and a gaming console, and then just repeat. There's more to life than that. But
yeah, and it speaks to me. All of our guests have had that moment, right? Like, one of our first questions that we ask every single guest is, when was the moment where like your mindset shifted? Doesn't necessarily have to be stoicism, but every single person that's like in their 30s, in their 40s, they had some terrible life event happen, whether it was divorce or attempted suicide or something like that. And they're like, it finally clicked for me then. And I think our generation, there's a lot of divide. We talk about division all of the time. A division that I don't think is talked about in our generation is, part of our generation has realized that the 9-to-5 sucks and that there's more to life than just being secure. And then there's part of our generation that says the people and the role models who have influenced that are bad and who have called out the institutions are bad. And so you have people who are kind of anti-establishment, anti-system, because they're like, we can work outside of the system and we can make a good living doing it and we can feel fulfilled doing it. And because people are so comfortable with the idea that these institutions are going to be there for them, so they can work that 9-to-5, get a decent sized house and never have to worry about anything and avoid, you know, the stress of having to push yourself. They're like, oh, you guys are crazy. And there's kind of a divide there. I don't think it's necessarily as bad of a divide as many others in society. But what it comes down to is, it's not even about wealth. It's not even about possessions or anything like that. It's just simply living up to your potential. No human being, no matter how dumb you think you are, no matter how unattractive you think you are, no matter how unphysically unfit you are right now, your potential is not a 9-to-5 office job or working construction or anything like that. Not to say that people who are working those jobs are bad people or anything like that. In fact, quite the opposite. I think those blue-collar jobs are very important in this country. But no human's peak is that. No human's potential is just like, I'm going to make $15 an hour. Every human being, no matter what your qualities are, holds something special in your potential. You just have to seek that out constantly and work towards it. So it's not even about wealth and possessions, which I think a lot of people stress when they're making this argument. It's like, oh, these brokies, or whatever term you want to use, these brokies have no cars and they have a small house and they have an ugly wife and they're not living lavishly and they're not living this amazing lifestyle. No, first of all, you don't need any of those things to be happy. Again, those are all external circumstances. And in fact, I would say the people who are doing these things and justifying them with possessions are still empty on the inside. Like, if you were somebody who's like, you've got great discipline and you're doing all of these side hustles, but the only thing you enjoy about life is like the money and the possessions that you're generating, then there's some sort of void in you still. Emotionally, mentally, there's some void in you still. So it's not about looking at it in terms of, I can upgrade whatever possession I want to upgrade it. It's, I can level up. I can take one step closer to my full potential. Because when you reach your full potential, right, that means you've maximized your happiness as well. If you've maximized your potential, your happiness is included in that. It's kind of intuitive. So don't believe the hype of like doing these side hustles and being able to drive nice cars and live in this luxury high rise and date all these women. And like, that's great. And those are great tools to have. Those are great experiences to have. I know both of us want to experience that in the future, but we've also laid the groundwork now so that we're happy now. Like, if my life genuinely did not improve from where it is right now, in terms of status, in terms of possessions, whatever, I would be happy, because I've found that like what I can do, reading books, meditating, the things that I've found, the habits that I've found at this age are fulfilling. So you want to build habits that are both fulfilling and then fulfill your purpose as well, which usually comes with that success. That's what we've emphasized from the start with this podcast. It's not about the success. It's just that when you find a natural fulfillment, when you really step into a stoic mindset, success seems to follow, because you're no longer ruled by emotions or anything else. You've just taken full control of your direction. And generally, when people decide that I'm going to take full control of myself, why would you point yourself in the opposite direction of your potential? Makes no sense. So take full control of yourself and then point yourself in the direction of your potential. Everything else falls into place.
You had a good point. I think the more you kind of get comfortable with who you are and the more you become internally fulfilled, the less you want. I mean, I went originally, like initially when I was talking about getting wealthy, and I think you and I both have the same goal of retiring our mom. That'd be great. And putting them in a comfortable situation. But the more initially I was like that, and then I can drive, you know, a 2022 GT500 Shelby Mustang. And I still want that car. I think it'd be cool. But you get the idea. I wanted other things as well. But as I personally, and I am assuming this is the same for you as well, but as I've gone through this journey of kind of figuring myself out and being more fulfilled on who I am as a person rather than the things that I own, I want less. All I want is just a family and kids, and I just want peace. I just want to be able to raise my family and kids and love them, you know, have good health. That's it. That's really all I want. That would bring me peace. And I mean, I don't care about the car. Man, would a Shelby be nice? Yeah, because then I could just go like drag racing down neighborhoods and stuff. But, you know, it's all for entertainment. You know what I mean? That's kind of, and there's nothing wrong with wanting things inherently. There's nothing wrong with wanting a nice car. There's nothing wrong with wanting a Rolex. There's nothing wrong with that. It gets to the point, though, that it becomes bad when it kind of takes over your want to be internally fulfilled. When the love of external things overtakes the love of the internal fulfillment. That's when it kind of becomes a problem. And the reason I say it's a problem is because then you're simply not fulfilled. You could own every single thing in the world, and if you still don't like who you are as a person, you're not going to be happy. And so that's where the deep work kind of happens. That's where we call it the dirty work. You know, you kind of get your hands muddy. You kind of have to get down in the dirt a little bit and crawl to start off. You know, you can't run right away. You can't sprint and go faster than everyone else. I mean, we all started crawling right in the beginning, and then you just get stronger and stronger. Things don't get easier, but you get stronger, you learn, you adapt, you find what works for you. I think the sad thing now is how our generation doesn't care about family much anymore. I hear a lot, and you see it on social media. They're like, yeah, I mean, I'd rather own a nice car. Honestly, like, I'd rather just be rich and alone with no family than be poor with a loving family. And that's sad. It really is, because family is kind of the one thing that I believe is keeping everyone together. If it works, if it's a healthy family, that's what keeps people together. That's what keeps people happy. And that love for other people is what is kind of the foundation of everything, is just love. And now we love possessions more than we love the people around us. That sucks. And there's only one way around that, and that's to simply love the people around you more than you love the things around you. How do you combat kind of that mentality? Well, stoicism is a great start, but it's not the only start. I think what's more important than finding stoicism is simply realizing that human nature is very simple. That's where you really have to start. Stoicism is kind of an explanation of how human nature works and how we think, and how thinking, you know, rationally over emotionally might be a good idea, or how chasing, you know, external fulfillment will not be a good idea. It's a very simple explanation of human nature. So kind of enjoying the simple things and realizing that the world is not as complex, and it doesn't have to be as complex as the media or the big corporations make it out to be. That's a first step. And speaking of the big corporations, it's pretty laughable if you think Big Pharma cares about your health, no offense. If you think these big corporations really care about you, and because you have security with those, you know, big industries that you can just work your 9 to 5, they don't care about you. They only care about staying in their little realm of control and their realm of wealth that keeps them up and above everybody else. You know, then call it a conspiracy. We don't really want to get too, you know, conspiratorial on the podcast, even though they may be correct and not conspiracies. But you have to really realize, kind of just open your eyes to the possibilities of what could be. You don't even have to agree, but you should really be asking these questions and do your own research. I don't know. We kind of sound like broken records at this point, but this message needs to be spread to the point where you hear it over and over. And then maybe sometime, you know, you hear it the fifth time, you hear it the 10th, that something clicks. Something you're like, okay, I've heard this. Maybe I'll try it out. Because that's kind of how it was for me with Stoicism. I saw it over social media initially, and I was like, whatever. And then I kept seeing it, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll give it a shot. Turned out it was one of the best things that could ever happen to me. So kind of hearing this over and over, I'm hoping that it clicks. I'm hoping that you hear something that you may agree with, or you may take a little bit of interest in and go explore for yourself.
When you said human nature is simple, and it's very funny you say that, because philosophy inherently is the study of human nature, right? We have very different schools of philosophy that exist all throughout the world that explain human nature differently, and why humans function the way they do differently, and how to maximize your happiness differently. But human nature is simple, and here's why. It relates to the Stoic concept of being a cosmopolitan, right, and living in one cosmopolis. We view other people largely, if we disagree with them, their success is our failure. That is not the case. Human nature is very simple. If one person is flourishing, then society has improved. Unless that person obviously is a terrible person and has like Hitler worldviews or something like that. But those people are rare in nature. And those people, I think, defy human nature because they are pure evil. But when you have good people, human nature is very, very simple. When a good person flourishes, whether you disagree with them on abortion or immigration or just like simple things that have been blown out of proportion by society today, you think that their success is your failure, but you forget that they are a fellow human being and they are still a good, morally correct person. And so their success is society's success and you benefit from it. So that's the human nature aspect. Human nature is simple. You can disagree with your neighbor on basically anything across the board, as long as it's not like killing people is good. As long as they have a basic moral code, you agree with everything in the basic moral code. You can disagree on anything else. Their success is your success. And when you approach relationships with that mindset, you start to become a more loving and positive person. So you ask the question, how do we combat this nature of humans that seems to prioritize possessions over people nowadays? It's realizing that seeing other people succeed is actually more beneficial to you than acquiring another possession. It's a simple code. It's a very simplistic message. And you're right, we are broken records, but you need to keep saying this until it catches on with society. Because it's great to have pockets of communities, especially on social media, that are saying these things. But until this is society's worldview, we are going to continue to struggle because we have that mindset of things are greater than people. My success is more important than anything else in the world. You're still going to find success when you start to de-escalate and deprioritize your success over others, believe it or not. That's a lie that you've been fed, is that you need to always be self-interested. It's a lie that we've been fed. So stop believing the lie and listen to the fact that human nature, just think about it for 2 seconds, is simplistic because it really boils down to what is a success and what is a failure. And the media and many institutions have blinded us to what that is. But any human being's success that you can agree to a moral code on is your success. And so you should be happy for them, even if you disagree with them across the board on politics or social issues or, you know, what the best movie is or anything trivial like that. That's fine. Because they are a human being just like you. And that's how we build that cosmopolis. It's a very important, it's one of the most important Stoic teachings that we can relate to people nowadays.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of hasty generalizations that are made. So for example, you know, for instance, if someone were to say, if you voted for someone who did XYZ, that makes you, I don't know, racist or something, right? But you're not racist. But because they're kind of nitpicking one thing that one person did one time, that immediately makes you all of these things. We kind of have to take the opposite approach, whereas you look at things holistically and then you kind of pick bits and pieces out that you agree with more so. And I think especially now, that's why we're very divided and that's why we're having trouble forming this cosmopolis that you were talking of. And what's tough is I know that I have friends who are, And I hate using this example, but it's the easiest to understand, is I have friends that are Democrat. I have friends that are Republican. I know that inherently all of them have the same morals. Okay. Let's use the issue of guns, for example. Both of my friends don't want people to die. Okay. Same value. They believe that people should get to live safely, but they may go about it in different ways. One side might say, for that, we should ban guns. For one side, they should say, we need more mental health help so that the guns don't get into the hands of the wrong people. So it's not that we're disagreeing morally. As a matter of fact, most people, even extremists on opposite sides, actually have very similar, if not the same, personal values. But the way they go about things and think about things are different. But if we don't stop to recognize that, we're going to continue to point fingers and say, you're a fascist, you're a terrible person, or I don't know, you're a communist, you're a socialist, whatever. Doesn't matter. We can call each other names. We can point fingers. It's not going to get us anywhere, though. I mean, take, for example, what happened yesterday. Okay. And I know we're not going to talk about it in depth. But after someone attempted to assassinate the former president of the United States, you had two reactions on both of the extremist sides. You had one side saying, see, the radical left is back at it again. And then you had people saying, they should have hit him. I can't believe they missed. No matter what you think, that's the real issue, is the division. Because usually, and my mom and grandma were telling me this, is when things that used to happen in our country that were just objectively bad, it was almost a point of unity for everybody. Take, for example, 9/11. When 9/11 happened, our entire country came together and said, we're American today, for the most part, right? But now you look at it today, you know, a former president of the United States almost dies, and people are just even more divided, taking sides, saying, see, I was right. See, I told you so. That's the issue. We're not even attempting to be, you know, a cosmopolis anymore. One side has to take all, unfortunately. And now for those of you who are like us, who try to pick out the pieces from each side, whether it's politics, whether it's morals, whether it's soccer teams, whether it's, you know, whatever, who try to pick out the bits and pieces they like and form their own opinions, keep it up. That's what we need. We need more critical thinking, and we also need people to rationally and calmly have discussions with people who don't agree with them to make progress. That is what we need. What we do not need is emotional reactions, things that are unhelpful, you know, provoking violence or wishing death or being evil or saying, see, I told you so, and pointing fingers and having to be right all the time. Being wrong sucks. It totally sucks, but it's a part of life. Just like failure is a part of life. We can never succeed all the time, just as we can never be right all the time. We sort of have to start accepting that these punches to the face are good for us. They're actually good. They're actually beneficial most of the time when we're wrong, when we fail, because they open up lessons. And when we learn, because knowledge is sort of the true virtue that's really sought out by most of philosophies, if we can just keep expanding our knowledge and sharing it with one another, then we might just be headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and we live in an emotional society, and that the byproduct of being angry, being anxious, being sad is what we see nowadays. And that's two things: seeking out someone to blame and seeking someone to label as the enemy. And any event that transpires in the Western world today, not even the Western world, also anywhere in the world, really, we see that. Whether it was the very, very serious nature of yesterday's shooting, or even like sports teams, to use an example, right? We have the Euros going on. Spain and England are playing as we are recording this podcast, which I'm surprising myself with my soccer knowledge, actually, because I'm not into soccer. But people from, you know, whoever wins that match, whoever loses that match is going to blame, what, the refs? They're going to blame the other side. They're going to find enemies on the other side. So something as trivial as sports, all the way as something as serious as politics and violence and things of those nature, instead of just saying this is bad or accepting the results for what they are, we seek to blame and we seek to find an enemy. And those are both products of being emotional. If you are not emotional and you're rational about the situation, then you realize, all right, my team lost. Okay. A, it's just a game. B, it is what it is. We'll move forward. There's always next year. Whatever rational argument you want to make that comes to a cool, common, collected place. But people don't want to do that anymore because it's uncomfortable to accept the results of something. If it doesn't match up with what you want, then you think that we live in this instant gratification society. So if the result doesn't match what you think it should, there's no reason not to complain. Somebody did you wrong. Somebody changed the result from what it should be. You did nothing wrong, right? And it's that kind of logic that is really eating away at people and society as a whole. And the challenge of that is just starting day to day with that, because that's wholly a mindset, and it relates to emotions, but it's in itself a mindset. And so how we kind of combat that is just do it in the day-to-day small things. Because if you initially set out and say, all right, when somebody, you know, cuts me off or when I don't win this event, then I'm just going to instantly be like, all right, I'm cool with this. Taking that leap from zero to 100 is virtually impossible for anybody to do. But having this, these minor inconveniences where, like, you know, your sports team doesn't win, or somebody cuts you off in traffic, or somebody is rude to you, somebody ignores you. Those are things that usually people forget about very quickly, but still in the moment, they're like, oh, that person's an asshole. Never accepting responsibility. Not that even if it isn't your fault, never accepting responsibility. So combat that by taking the time to cognitively think through these things when they're very, very small, so that you can get used to it and you can get comfortable with being uncomfortable accepting these results. And then you can kind of start to scale it up. It is like a business. We talk about business all the time on this podcast. We're two very business-centric people. And it's like scalability of a business. Your mindset is scalable, but you have to start very small if you want it to be successful. If you were to start a company and you're like, I'm going to launch in all 50 states and have 1,000, you know, supply centers, distribution centers, and no chain of command whatsoever, that business is going to fall flat on its face almost instantly. So if you say, I'm going to apply this mindset to everything in my life instantly with no support whatsoever, the second you try to apply that mindset, you're like, nope, this sucks. Nope, not doing it. Nope. But if you say, I'm going to start out and I'm going to be realistic. If I get upset about this big event, but I noticed that when somebody was rude to me while I was getting my coffee, that's a success. It's one small step. And then scaling it from there. So not to be too analytical, but that's just how you approach it. And that's how, you know, that's the solution to a lot of things is just accepting. Acceptance, amorphity, accepting your fate, loving your fate. You eventually come to that place, right? And then when you don't have anybody to seek out to blame, you don't have anybody to seek out as an enemy, then all of a sudden you can coexist with people when you disagree with them on almost everything. There are people in my life, even family, who I disagree with on most political issues. I disagree with fundamental things, even. But I don't seek out an enemy. And as much as possible, I try not to blame other people for my problems. And when you adapt that mindset, then, oh, you disagree with me? That's okay. It's beautiful that we can have two wildly different perspectives. Not, oh, you disagree with me? You suck. You're stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. Which, isn't that the rhetoric of today? The other side is the enemy. The other side is the enemy of democracy. The other side is the enemy of common sense. Just think about the rhetoric of today. How often we use the term enemy. Enemy is a serious label we give to something, and yet it's thrown around almost nonchalantly. So consider the gravity of that, and consider the gravity of you changing your mindset just simply about these two issues.
And I don't have, you know, a ton of time left, but there's a couple things I want to say, I guess, as final remarks for myself. You said acceptance. And one thing we also need to be accepting of is the people around us who are not like us. We need to be very accepting and understanding of the people around us who may not share the values that we share or who may not share our opinions, right? Not only do we need to be accepting of the results and of life's hardships, but more importantly, we need to be accepting of our neighbors. We need to be accepting of the people who, in our eyes, we may see as lost or as, you know, corrupt or who need help. And the reason is because if we turn these people away while, you know, thinking, oh, I'm trying to better myself, so anyone who disagrees and who, you know, opposes me, I can't let them in. That's kind of contradictory to the entire idea of improving yourself, because improving yourself is holistic. And one aspect of that is, you know, improving the lives of others around you as well. And you're not going to do that by turning people away. It sucks to be surrounded by people who are so far gone to you or who are so far past the point of you can't even understand why they think what they think, but they're people. They are still people, right? They are humans just like you and I. And just because they have different opinions does not make them bad. Or like you said, it does not make them your enemy. Okay. We need to stop viewing people with the opposing side as our enemy, but as someone that we want to understand better, right? We need to really truly understand these people and why they think the way they do. And if we can do that, then we can say, okay, here's what I think. Will you listen to me now? But I'm not saying you're wrong. I just want to tell you why I think. And then you build from there. So being accepting of the people around you, even if they aren't, you know, even if they are not sharing your morals, right? You shouldn't, I mean, granted, like you said, if you had someone who had like world ideologies like Hitler did, well, maybe you should like tell someone and get that figured out. But for the most part. Even people around you who you think you could never get along with. That's the big thing. Spreading the love. That we talked about how Stoicism is a philosophy kind of founded and rooted in kindness and love. And if there's anything that could kind of fix the division, not and this, I guess, the spiritual division, the political division, all the division that is not only in our country, but in our world, it's simply going to be accepting and loving your neighbor and starting small. Like you said, if you want to improve your mindset like a business and you want to scale it, you have to start small. And the same thing goes with the people around you. If you want to make the world a better place and if you want the world to not be divided, you got to start small. You got to start with the person sitting right next to you who might be a polar opposite personality, you know, value holder, whatever it is. It's uncomfortable, but anything worth having is not easy, right? Good things take time. Change is difficult. I could say, you know, all these stupid things that you see on Pinterest and Twitter that white moms repost and are like, son, look at this. I saw it. It was really good. But it's, come on, guys. I mean, it's not hard. It's a very simple idea, but it's very difficult to kind of embody it, right? We can say it all the time, but if action does not follow our words, then our words are absolutely useless. So if there's one thing I could leave you with, it's start with the people around you. Start with the people that need it the most. And those are usually the people that disagree with you and are as far away from you as possible. Accept those people in, start loving those people. And when I say love, it's not like a romantic love. It's the way that, you know, you love your dog, the way that you have companionship for your pet or for your friend or just for another human, right? You see something nice and you get that happy feeling inside. That's the way we should be treating the other people around us to kind of close that gap and help us move forward together. And that's the only way someone would ever even listen to you in the first place. You're not going to get someone to listen to your idea by walking up to them and being like, dude, you're such a bigot. You're wrong. Let me tell you what's wrong with you right now. You walk up to someone and you're like, hey, nice to meet you. Want to sit down and grab coffee? I'd love to talk to you more and get to know you better. Build from there. Just starts with kindness, man. Pretty simple. So those are my closing remarks. As we, you know, we mentioned kindness may be the fifth Stoic virtue, or it might be the foundation of all of the pillars of Stoicism. Stoicism is rooted in love. It's a pretty simple philosophy.
Well, and it's interesting to kind of reconcile the fact that we have many teachings in Stoicism about bad influences and avoiding the crowds and avoiding the masses. But then we also have Marcus Aurelius saying, be strict with yourself and be tolerant with others. And so the solution is simple in terms, but it's not simple in practice because it's a very delicate line between being kind to people and then just accepting their faults for what they are and letting that influence you. And so Seneca, shun both courses. You should neither become like the bad because they are many, nor be the enemy of the many because they are unlike you. So what we do here is we walk the tightrope, right? We take the initiative of becoming a better person, of becoming a Stoic, of becoming somebody who lives a life philosophy that is fulfilling, and then we lead by example. And we accept people for their faults without letting them influence us. Because it's very easy to be empathetic and say, oh, you know, somebody said something mean to you and you're really sad about it and you're crying about it. Oh, I feel bad for you. Now, for me, in the back of my head, there's the logical part of you that says, why are you upset over this? And so the course of action is not quieting that inner voice that says, why are they upset over this? It's keeping that inner voice so that you realize that you are living the more fulfilling life without feeling that you are better than that person. Because it's recalling you were once where that person was. You were once at that stage where you were emotionally immature, or you didn't have full control of your emotions, or you reacted in an emotional way. So it is not for us to judge, it is just for us to help improve. That's all we have to do, is just help improve. And if somebody is lost and they don't want to improve, so be it. But it's about us taking the initiative. It's about taking the power out of the hands of other people and putting it in ourselves so that we are empowered. Because we're an empowered generation. And so it's natural then that Stoicism is a good tool for us to use as a generation to empower ourselves to change the systems we talked about today and kind of bridge the gap of the division that plagues us today. So it's Stoicism as a simple solution in words, but a difficult solution in practice that we are currently implementing and leading by example. And we hope to lead many more, because we believe that society would be much better off with it. So with that being said, this has been this week's episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. I've been your co-host, Ren.
And I have been your co-host, Mateo. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week with a guest.
Big time.